Blog Talk Radio.
And you're in the G-Zone with Giovanni Gelati. Gio, what's going on today?
Thank you, Big Daddy. Well, today our guest is Betsy Otter Thompson. We're going to be talking about her new book, Love Human. Tomorrow we have Margaret Grunderson. Thursday we have the Helping Hands for Us Thirsty Thursday party. We'll be simulcasting it. That's at 8 p.m. Later this month, June Foster, Melanie M. Jasky, Christy Cameron, Flora Regatta, Kim Vogel Sawyer, Larry Peterson, Tracy Krause will all be with us. It's a pretty full June. Let's bring Betsy Otter Thompson into the show. Betsy, how are you doing today? Thanks for coming back.
I'm fine, Giovanni. How are you? And thank you for inviting me back. I'm delighted to be here.
Can't complain. Did you get hammered with the rain yesterday?
We've gotten some. We haven't gotten as much as a lot of other people have gotten. I think the Jersey coast has gotten most of it.
Yeah, we didn't get as much as they were talking about. I was expecting to have to break out a boat and start rowing up the street with everything they were talking about. And we really didn't. We got some rain, which was good, but
yeah.
Thankfully not as much as the crazy stuff they were talking about. So
they like to hype it up so they get people to listen.
Yeah.
I'm sure it was severe at the beach where they had all the floodings, and so the radio stations, they now reach a rather broad audience.
Yeah. Now, your new book, Love Human, is one word if folks are looking for it, whether it's on your website or on Amazon. One word, Love Human. Can you tell us about this and how this differs from your other books?
Well, before the show even began, you asked me about it being a one word, and I thought that it was a good question because it's called Love Human in one word because I believe those two words are synonymous. Love and human, we are one and the same. We are love. And so it's a book about finding comfort in a world where uncomfortable things happen. And we live in a world now where a lot of uncomfortable things are happening. And it's really about seeing the big picture of where we come from before we got here and where we are going after we leave here. And it helps our perspective grow in terms of what our journey is all about.
That's pretty intense. Now, most of your work is spiritual in nature. It's just like a non-denominational type of spirituality. Is that, did I describe it in a decent way, or can I'm sure
yes.
You can put it better words than me.
Yeah, it's really about our spirituality and the forces that run our life while we're here. And it's not religious in nature. It's really inclusive of all religions. It's more about the spirituality and the God within all of us. And it's focused on embracing the world as it is, and the people around us as they are, and seeing the good or loving whatever that is, not because we live in a perfect world, which, of course, we do not, but because as we love and accept life as it is, love and acceptance grow. And I think that that's the goal, that love and acceptance grow. And when we spend all our time judging the choices of others and what they are doing, then judgment is growing. And so we need to be as we wish other people would be, and we wish others would be tolerant and accepting of us, and so we need to be tolerant and accepting of others.
Very nice. Now, what kind of feedback have you received so early on? What are folks saying about your book?
They're saying is they think it's the best book, but they're just like me in that respect. I always think the last book I'm doing, or the book I'm working on, or the book I'm promoting is the best book, because it's the book that has answered my questions in the moment. And I guess maybe it's reaching a lot of people who it's also answering their questions in the moment, too. And that's how the book really began, out of my own need for answers to my questions. And so I'm assuming we're all here one, you know, as one. We're all one in energy and in emotion. And so it would only follow the questions that I have or the questions that other people have. And so, therefore, it's touching a button in all of us.
Interesting. Now, the different spiritual aspects that you have in here, do you find that folks that maybe that are disenfranchised with whatever they are involved with gravitate more towards it because of its openness and acceptance? Are you finding that, or do you think it's something else?
I think that we're all hungry for spiritual truth and spiritual growth and something that will make us feel good about our lives instead of bad about our lives. And we're bombarded by the news media all the time about all the awful things that are happening. And so I think people are hungry for hearing the good things that are happening, hearing the positive instead of the negative. And it seems to be the more the negative grows, the more people have need for the positive. And my book is definitely about positive attitudes toward life and about taking personal responsibility for what we have in our lives, about the principles and the physics of action-reaction and how we are really more powerful than we think we are, and that we create the kind of life we live by what we express as what we stand for, the action we put out into the universe is the action we invite back. And it's very empowering to know that we have the power to create the kind of life we want in an emotional way. That doesn't mean that we control everything that happens to us in our lives. I think that we have challenges, and we chose those challenges before we got here, but we chose them for a good reason, because we believed that they would help us to go within and know ourselves better and remember what being here is all about being here, about growing and about learning more about the love within us and in ourselves and the love within others. And so it's really a book with many different kinds of messages, but they all come back to the same idea that we are responsible for the way we view our life. We are responsible for the opinions we take. We are responsible for the actions we take. And we create our life by how we act those out.
Neat. Now, how do you have the book laid out? Is this one stream of consciousness, or do you have little stopping points along the way for places to pause and reflect and look back on what was just read?
Well, there's 20 chapters or 21 chapters, and how it was laid out, Giovanni, is really, I'm not even sure how it was laid out. I just sat down and I had the idea for the book, and I didn't even have a title when I began. I just started writing, and I believe that the work is channeled and that spirit speaks through me, and I'm sort of a vehicle. And so it certainly speaks to what I'm curious about, because I wouldn't write about anything that I wasn't curious about. And so the chapters form, the first chapter is Who Am I? And the answer, the short answer, is Perfect Love Now and Forever, hence the title Love Human. And then it goes on to talk about our imagination and the physics that run the universe and how we find more comfort. And it also talks about what's happening in outer space. You know, are there really other universes, and are there really people on them, and what's that all about? And so each chapter just sort of evolved from the last idea, but it just, I don't know how to explain what I do, because it's the same way you would have to ask an artist, where do you get your image, or you would have to ask a composer, where do you get your melodies? They come from somewhere inside that person through the gift that they brought with them, and the same thing is true for me.
Interesting. Where can folks find you on social media? You have a nice website. Where's that at?
It's at BetsyThompson.com, and I have all my links to other social media on BetsyThompson.com, and also all my books are up there, and you can click on the book if you're interested in learning more about it, and that takes you to Amazon where you can buy it.
Very nice. So do you have anything in the pipe, anything following this up?
Well, yes, I'm working on my next book, of course. I'm always working on the next book. And the next book is called You Are What You Think, Make Your Thoughts Delicious.
So is this a recipe book or what?
No. No, it's about the thoughts in your head that we create our life by how we begin, first of all, by what we put in our head to think. Our thoughts are really important. We don't think they are because we think we're stuck with the thoughts we have and we can't get rid of them. I remember thinking to myself, if I was having a conversation with someone years ago and saying, what am I supposed to do with these thoughts in my head? They're there. I can't get rid of them. Well, not exactly. Your thoughts are there, yes, but if you don't like your thoughts, you can replace them with other thoughts that you do like. And you replace them by, if you have a negative thought, then you replace it with a positive thought because you can't have two opposing thoughts in your head at the same time. And so, yes, we are responsible for the thoughts we maintain and the thoughts we hold, and we are responsible for finding a positive way of looking at things instead of a negative way of looking at things. It's all up to us. We are autonomous human beings making decisions moment by moment.
How is it you go about if you run into someone or someone approaches you and they really have either a bad disposition or a really negative outlook. How do you go about trying to get them to change those behaviors? Is this something that's covered in Love Human or one of your other books? I mean, because what you're
espousing
here is more of a positive mental energy, right?
I think that if I was confronted with someone with a very negative attitude, I would not try to change the attitude of that person. I would just simply ask myself how I had attracted this energy to me, because I believe that we live in a world of emotional mirrors, and that if I have attracted a person to me with a very negative attitude and that negative attitude bothered me, then I would have to look at the negativity in me and ask how I invited that energy into my life. Because I don't believe you can change other people. They need to go through their own process. But if their behavior bothers me, then it's about me looking at why I have attracted that emotion back to me. And I would ask myself, okay, if this person is very negative and sees the worst in everything that's happening in their lives, then how have I been negative recently that I have now faced my mirror? Because, you know, people change because they want to change. They don't change because you want them to change. They change when they're good and ready to change. And so you can't really change anyone else. You may have delusions of thinking you can, but I don't believe you can. I think people change when they want to change and when they have a motivation to change. At least that was true for me. I mean, I went for half my life in a blame attitude, blaming everyone else for my problems, and I don't think anyone could have, you know, somebody might have told me I was a blamer, but that doesn't mean I was going to change not to be one. I had to be motivated to change, and the motivation my soul gave me was to be almost, to end up almost living in my car and being almost homeless and realizing that whatever I was doing in my life, it certainly wasn't working, and I better find something that did work. And what I did was I knew I'd had this gift of being able to communicate with spirit since I was about 4 or 5 years old, but I had ignored it because when I told my sister what I was doing, she traumatized me for weeks about it, so I stopped doing it. So at this point in my life, I said, well, what do I have to lose by honoring this gift? I mean, I have to ask myself, what is not honoring this gift gotten me? Well, it's gotten me 2 divorces and almost ending up homeless. And so I sort of said a prayer. I mean, it didn't sound like a prayer to me at the time, but I sat down in my one-room roach-infested apartment in California and said I wanted to honor the gift and I wanted to share it with others than I would, but I sure needed a job to support me while I did it. And 3 weeks later, I had a job that I kept working for the same man for the next 18 years in the entertainment business, and then I was able to retire. So I went from almost being homeless to retiring in 18 years, and it was like a miracle. It was like when I decided to finally become my authentic self and let the chips fall where they may, the universe said, okay, if you're ready, we're ready, and here we go. And everything in my life that's happened since then has been to support this gift. So I really think that if you have something, and like a gift, any kind of a gift, and you ignore it, well, don't expect your life to go smoothly because you come here for a reason, and I obviously came here to share this gift, and when I wasn't, life did not run smoothly. When I did share it, then everything fell into place.
Nice. What do you do to chill? I mean, you seem like a high energy person. You have a lot going on. What do you do to relax?
Well, I'm a knitter. I have a little knitting business. It's called Sweet Angel Sweaters. I make little sweaters for children, and I've just started doing expos, which I'm having a lot of fun with, spiritual expos, and I take my sweaters with me, and I take my books with me, and I take my tarot deck with me, and I do readings. And so in my spare time, I guess you'd say I knit when I'm knitting, I watch television. So I watch television sometimes, and I read books, and I have fun with my friends.
That's nice. Well, what kind of shows you watch?
Well, I'm a sucker for the entertainment ones, like So You Think You Can Dance and American Idol, and my tastes are very plebeian, and I love anything that has to do with talent, because I love seeing talent discovered after being in the entertainment business for a while.
I used to watch Idol all the time. I stopped a few years ago. We like watching The Voice a little bit better.
Uh-huh. Well, some people have switched over.
Yeah,
personal preference.
Yeah, they didn't seem like they wanted to change that much on Idol. I think that was their downfall.
Yeah, well, they're different now. They have different people on and different.
Yeah, the judges weren't that good either.
Yeah.
I think when he got Steven Tyler on, I think he kind of put a knife in it a little bit.
Yeah, well, that's all gone. It's all new.
Yeah.
They have evolved.
Have not come back, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So, cool. All right. So, you have the Love Human. Have you ever considered adding like workbooks or something like that to your books, because they seem to have so much information in it? Have you ever considered adding any type of work areas to them to try to make things a little bit reinforce things, stuff like that in it?
Yeah, well, the Walking Through Illusion book has the worksheet at the end of each chapter, and I did get a lot of positive feedback from people about that, because it forced them to ask themselves, what the chapter had to do with their personal life, and I am going to bring that back in another book. I'm not sure if I'm going to bring it back in this one. I might, since I hear that you like it so much, that you like the idea so much, and I think it is helpful to people. So. Maybe I will. Maybe that'll be part of this book, or the next book, rather.
Nice. Do you have Love Human near you? Do you want to read a little bit from it?
Well, I could. I didn't think of doing that, but
yeah.
Okay, I'll
read
something from the
energy.
Chapter called Comfort. Okay.
Mhm.
Are you there?
Let it rip.
Okay, so this is a chapter called Comfort. It says, how do I get comfortable in my experience? And then there's a little sort of a poem that it starts out with, when you ask for more comfort, take a good look at what you consider uncomfortable, because that's where you will find it. And then it starts with the chapter, if there is only one God and you're it, then who is everyone else? They look like you, they act like you, they feel like you, and they think like you. Therefore, they must be someone like you, and they are. They are just expressing divinity in their own unique way. When the energy of the whole first contemplated expansion, it considered the following posers. How can I become more of who I already am? How can I expand in an interesting and challenging way? How can I find more inspiration and satisfaction? I know what I'll do. I'll let every part of myself find its own comfortable expansion. That way, diversification will make the whole grander. Happily, each part discovered that it could be God, while at the same time exist in personal thought. For eons, God thrived in this dual existence, enjoying every part of self. As each part found new and exciting expression, other parts rejoiced. Because whatever one found to delight in, everyone else could enjoy. And I don't think that's so different from what we do now. People are living their own lives and expressing who they are individually, and everyone else who enjoys what they're expressing joins them. And so I think that's what we did before we, when we first came here and first had bodies on this beautiful planet Earth. We were just sharing our hearts and delighting with everyone else who joined us. And then it goes on to say, Into this idyllic universe of expanding love and beauty, a new idea emerged. It happened when one god said to another god, "I'm a more important part of the whole than you are." Because energy lives to be innovative, it contemplates every new possibility, and several gods tried this one. The premise of better and worse had never been tested before. In fact, nothing like it had ever been considered. As a few daring souls gave it credence, others got curious and wanted to try it too. The testing of new ideas had always been enchanting in the past, so enchantment was anticipated from this testing as well. God had investigated the unknown for eons. But if better and worse existed, they had to find a way to fit that possibility into their daily lives. In an effort to do so, they came up with the following dictates to make it feasible. And then there's a list of the dictates that they had. Don't love others if you want to feel secure. Keep everything to yourself if you want to have enough. Ignore eccentrics if you want to feel you belong. Badmouth others if you want to feel worthy. Take from others if you want to replenish. Ridicule others if you want to feel smart. Bully others if you want to get your way. Overpower others if you want to be left alone. Demand that others kowtow if you want to feel important. Give favoritism if you want to feel special. Hide your feelings if you want to feel safe. Be bossy if you want to get ahead. Lie if you want to stay out of trouble. And then the book asks you to how you feel after reading that list. Did you wince here and there? Did you ignore a few? Did you stop reading and put the book down? Or maybe you rushed through the list, sure that you were exempt. And then this is what happened to those long-ago gods. They didn't want to see themselves on this list either, so they refused to admit they were. These entities weren't horrible gods. They were curious gods. The horror came from suppressing the unpleasant feelings that followed their new behavior. And when they refused to be honest and evaluate their content ran their lives. A few of these pioneering souls were willing to deal with their ambiguity, and once they were willing, they were open to being guided. Memory jogging is one of God's favorite pastimes. God knows that if forgetfulness is faced, your memory returns. Here are a few of the memory joggers the source was able to offer. God is in every heart because God is all-inclusive. God has whatever God needs, since God lives to expand. God expresses individually because God is diversified. God knows that to love is to receive love. God knows that abundance is and therefore lives in everyone. God knows that disrespect is only felt when given. God knows that uniqueness is the definition of God. God knows that power comes from within, not without. God knows that respect for others makes you feel important. God knows that every part of self makes up the whole. God knows that releasing hate makes more room for love. God knows that honesty sets you free forever. And then the last paragraph, this is, what kind of God would have you searching for comfort outside yourself? Wouldn't that be frustrating? God believes that comfort sources within. You seek that feeling every moment you live. Where you are is where your soul believes it can be found. Take a chance on knowing yourself. You gamble in other areas of life, don't you? You gamble that your education will empower you, that your job will fulfill you, that your community will satisfy you, and that your friendships will please you. Is getting to know yourself any less important? Take a leap of faith. The risk is worth the prize. And then it ends with a poem. To be alive is to be full. What you put into that fullness is up to you.
It's pretty powerful. Very nice. When you speak in front of groups, what are like some of the top questions that you get whenever you're engaged? Do folks have like, is there kind of a 1, 2, 3 kind of normal questions that folks ask you right off the bat?
Usually people want to know about my personal journey, and I don't find that so surprising because I find when I listen to people speak, it's really their personal journey that I'm interested in too. I don't care so much about their theories of this and that and the other. It's really what they've been through that I connect with, the journeys that they have had that really make a connection to me. So when I speak, I take a theme, but I always have it referring to my own journey and how I got through, I talk about how I've changed my attitude about a lot of things I had the first half of my life and how they turned my life around, changing my attitude about things. For instance, the blaming that I had when I blamed everyone else for all my problems, and I found anyone, I used a lot of people to blame. I blamed my parents, and I blamed my siblings, and I blamed my husbands, and I blamed anyone I could find for the situation I was in. And the way to turn that around, I had to ask myself, well, if my soul chose those situations for me to go through, there must have been a reason. So it's up to me to find the reason that I experienced those things. So why did I choose these people to come here with if I had such a hard time with them? And I realized that the person I'd had the hardest time with was my mother. And at a very young age, I realized that we were very different, that she had a different outlook toward life, the things that she prioritized, I did not. The way she behaved is not the way I wanted to behave. And so I didn't know how to deal with that, and a lot of resentment grew inside of me, and it influenced a lot of my choices. And I realized when I went back and tried to look at it and ask myself, well, what did I gain from knowing this woman? You know, what were the positive things? What if I could focus on the positive things about it? And one of the things I realized was that the very fact that we were so different and had such a different outlook on life was what motivated me to find an outlook I did like. If it hadn't been for how negative I felt about her position in life, I wouldn't have looked so hard for what was right for me. And so in a way, she was a gift to me, probably the biggest gift I ever had, because she was the motivation I needed to find the philosophy that worked for me, the life that worked for me, the friends that worked for me, instead of accepting what she thought was right for me. I had to find what was right for me, and she was the one who pushed me to do it. Now, I'm not saying she consciously knew that, but I'm sure before we got here, she consciously knew she would be this motivator if I was able to get through the resentment and the anger. And so when I share things like that, people identify, because we've all had challenges like this. We've all had those things that seem so difficult to get through or so difficult to handle. And the fact that I could say, this is how I did it, that's what people resonate with, because it gives them hope that they can do it too. And then people also share when they've done the same thing. I was surprised when I started these radio stations, because there were so many radio hosts who had been through the same process, who had been abused in one way or another as children, and had gotten through it and found the positive from what they had happened, or found the growth from what had happened. And I find that that's a very powerful journey to share with others, that how you've gotten through it and how you have learned to live with it in a way that is comfortable instead of uncomfortable, and in a way that is productive instead of destructive.
Nice. Hey, you've been on the show before. Before we run out of time here, what's a question either I haven't asked you today you were hoping I would, or maybe a question someone hasn't asked you in your social media or out in your out and about as you've gone out to speak to groups? Do you have anything like that?
Well, I have a chapter on health that hasn't been asked a lot about, and it's very important to me because I feel like I have healed spontaneously for one thing, a lump in my back, and I had something called spontaneous paralysis where I couldn't move my legs, that I healed from. But it wasn't about healing anything on the outside of me. It was about going within and asking myself what this represented in terms of my thoughts in my own head and the attitudes I had, and how when I found the ease within my thoughts, the ease came to the body as opposed to dis-ease. And so the chapter on health, which is chapter 16, was very important to me. And I think that what got me started here was the book by Louise Hay on how to heal your body, because I went to that book when I needed to understand what I was thinking, what was going on me that was causing a lump to come in my back. And I did heal it through a meditation of realizing lumps represent resentment, and when I returned from California, my old resentments about the family were coming up, and as soon as I realized that they were part of the reason that I had moved to California and transformed my life, I was able to thank them instead of resent them, and the lump disappeared overnight, even though I'd gone in for an MRI the night before to discover what it was all about. The next day, it was gone.
Pretty awesome. Well, I want to thank you for being on the show again. You're welcome to come here anytime you want.
Well, thank you.
total pleasure. I enjoy having you back on the show. It's been a true pleasure. Everyone, Betsy Otter Thompson, she is the author of Love Human. If you stop by her website or you drop by her Amazon author page, you can take a look at all of Betsy's titles and have fun. And I want to thank everyone for passing the word about the show on Twitter, Facebook, Tumblr, StumbleUpon, Pinterest. Thanks for helping maybe help someone find a new author to them. I hope everybody has an awesome day. Betsy, thanks a lot for being on. Tomorrow we're on at 11:30 a.m. and then again on Thursday night at 8 p.m. Everybody have an awesome day. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.